Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the word of mouth. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy. Welcome to our memorial observance for 2021. And if this is the day for you to join the growing community of listeners, go to our website, khoifm.org, to become a member or call 515-292-2878. The weather for this Memorial Day will be cloudy with a high of 72, according to the Des Moines Register. It'll be sunnier the rest of the week, yet a chance of showers on Wednesday, and back into the 80s by next weekend. Now let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news from around our fair state.
The verdict in the case of the man accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts topped the past week's news in Iowa. This past Friday, a jury found defendant Christian Bahena Rivera guilty of first-degree murder in the 2018 death of Tibbetts. Jurors had deliberated for about 7 hours over 2 days. This after a dramatic day of testimony in which Bahena Rivera had taken the witness stand and testified that he did not kill Tibbetts. Instead, he pointed blame at two unknown masked men, one armed with a gun, the other with a knife, who, he said, had surprised him at his home the night Tibbetts disappeared and forced him to drive around Brooklyn, Iowa before they spotted Tibbetts, who was jogging. Bahena Rivera said the man armed with a knife got out of the car for 10 to 12 minutes while the other sat in the back seat. The man with the knife returned, put something heavy in the trunk, and told Bahena Rivera to drive away. Then Bahena Rivera said the men threatened the safety of his family if he spoke up. Bahena Rivera testified that he went to the car's trunk, found Tibbetts barely alive, carried her into a cornfield, and covered her with cornstalks. His testimony differed dramatically from statements he had given police 3 years ago, when he never mentioned anyone else connected with Tibbetts' death. Ultimately, jurors did not buy it. Bahena Rivera's conviction brings with it a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. A sentencing hearing was set for July 15th. Bahena Rivera's lawyer said they planned to appeal the jury's verdict. Iowa elected officials reacted to that verdict. Governor Kim Reynolds said, in her words, "There is no bringing Molly back, but her memory will continue to live on through the happiness she brought to all who knew her." Iowa's two U.S. senators also reacted. Chuck Grassley said, in his words, "Today the murderer was found guilty and justice was served." Joni Ernst agreed, saying today justice was rightly served. In other news last week, the statewide death toll from the coronavirus since the pandemic started hit 6,055 by yesterday. The number of people in the state infected by the virus also went up, approaching 402,000 by yesterday. Governor Reynolds made news on the coronavirus front last week when she told a town hall on Fox News that, in her words, the emergency is over. She said, again in her words, "We were able to balance the lives and livelihoods of Iowans and do it in a responsible manner." During the pandemic, the governor focused on keeping the state open for business. And a man who had threatened the governor for imposing some coronavirus restrictions pleaded guilty to second-degree harassment last week. 48-year-old Harvey Hunter Jr. of Stewart had sent the governor a threatening voicemail saying she should be shot for treason for imposing restrictions. Also last week, the Moderna coronavirus vaccine was said to be 100% effective in children aged 12 to 17, 2 weeks after the second dose of the vaccine. No serious safety concerns were identified. Meanwhile, in Black Hawk County, the Board of Health signed off on a plan to tap $10,000 from a private foundation to encourage more residents to get the coronavirus shots. The county's public health director said, quoting now, "We've hit a wall with vaccination rates. It's going much slower than we like." About half the county's population, 16 and older, has been fully vaccinated, and the county would like to reach 80%. The county is weighing offering gift cards and perhaps some kind of lottery. There was also word that the state of Iowa has paid around $29 million in fraudulent jobless claims since the coronavirus pandemic started. And there was a report that after more than a year of coronavirus-limited travel, Iowans were flocking to the Des Moines International Airport for Memorial Day weekend getaways. An airport spokesperson said, more than 15,000 travelers would move through the airport during the holiday weekend. Last Memorial Day weekend, only 4,000 passengers traveled through the airport. There was also a report that some Iowa school districts are asking, in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic and Iowa's new law prohibiting school districts from requiring masks, whether summer break should start early. In Marion, the district has decided to end the academic year 1 week ahead of schedule. It will now end this coming Friday instead of June 11th. The Iowa Department of Education said school districts and their boards are free to make local decisions about ending the year earlier than planned if the district's calendars meet the minimum of 1,080 hours, or 180 days, required by state law, and if a public hearing is held first. And there was word that it was up to Iowa school districts to decide whether they are in compliance with federal rules about masks on buses. And those federal rules remain in place even after the passage of the state's law banning mask mandates. The Ames School District cited that federal mandate to continue requiring masks when children ride school buses. The Ballard School District has made masks optional on its buses. And the Urbandale, West Des Moines, and Burlington districts all stopped requiring masks on buses. There was also a report that the owners of a Waukee bowling alley had backed off on their policy requiring customers to wear face masks after they had endured verbal abuse and several acts of vandalism by those who oppose that policy. Christy Morse, the co-owner of Warrior Lanes, said interactions with customers over the masking policy had become increasingly hostile in recent weeks after the Federal Centers for Disease Control had loosened its mask-wearing guidance for fully vaccinated adults. She said, in her words, "It just got awful, and it wore us down. So we did give in to the bullies." In Ames last week, word that the school district superintendent had resigned. Jenny Reisner will leave on June 30th, after 3 years on the job. In Des Moines last week, more than 100 people gathered downtown to commemorate the anniversary of George Floyd's death. It came 1 year after Floyd was killed by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Speakers at the Des Moines event said they hoped to make sure Floyd did not die in vain. A jury has found Chauvin guilty of third-degree murder, second-degree murder, and manslaughter. Also last week, Democrat Dave Muehlbauer announced he's running for the U.S. Senate seat in Iowa, held by Republican Chuck Grassley. Muehlbauer was on the Crawford County Board of Supervisors for 4 years. And two sources told the Des Moines Register that former Iowa Democratic Congresswoman Abby Finkenauer is preparing for a possible run for Grassley's U.S. Senate seat. Finkenauer won election in Northeast Iowa's 1st Congressional District in 2018, then lost her bid for election last year to Republican Ashley Hinson. Senator Grassley has not announced whether he will seek another term next year. Meanwhile, at the nation's capital, both of Iowa's U.S. Senators, Grassley and Joni Ernst, were among the 35 Republicans who voted to block debate on a bill to form a bipartisan commission to investigate the January attack on the U.S. Capitol. Back in Des Moines, the city council unanimously voted to offer forgivable loans and reimbursements for city staffers' housing costs in an effort to convince them to leave the suburbs and come live where they work, in Des Moines. Right now, only 38% of city staff live in the city, and only 18% of the city's police department employees live where they serve. The new incentives include a $15,000 forgivable loan for city employees who buy a home in Des Moines, $15,000 for home remodeling costs for employees who already live in the city, and $2,000 a year in rental reimbursements for employees who rent in Des Moines. Also last week in Des Moines, word that the city would hire a nonprofit organization to run future training sessions for police officers. This after months of public criticism of the officers who had been leading de-escalation training for the police department. Two of those officers were named in excessive force and racial profiling lawsuits. The city is in the process of negotiating a contract with the Police Executive Research Forum of Washington, D.C. It provides resources for law enforcement units across the nation. There was also word last week that more than 750 Iowa homeowners would lose an average of $3,200 apiece after state lawmakers failed to extend a tax credit for solar energy systems. In another story, word that dozens of state residents, lawmakers, and environmental groups want Iowa's Natural Resources Director to review a decision to allow a cattle feedlot near an environmentally sensitive creek in northeast Iowa. The review is being requested in connection with the Supreme Beef Project, an 11,600 animal open lot feeding operation near the headquarters of Bloody Run Creek in Clayton County. Meanwhile, last week, Facebook announced plans to expand its data center in Altoona. That will bring an additional $2 million annually to the city of Altoona. The company first announced plans to build a data center in Altoona in 2013. Since then, Facebook has invested about $2 billion to develop the site. The new development will include two more buildings, which will bring to 10 the number of structures on the site. In other news last week, Iowa Workforce Development issued a warning that fraudsters had created a fake jobless website to try to steal claimants' identities. The website looks like the state's official portal, where workers fill out personal information such as their dates of birth and their social security numbers when they make unemployment claims. The real Workforce Development Agency said applicants should only apply for benefits at www.workforcedevelopment.gov. There was also word that U.S. Census data released late last week showed that the Des Moines suburbs continued to lead Iowa's growth. The agency estimated that Waukee, Grimes, Ankeny, Norwalk, and Johnston grew faster than any other cities in the state from 2019 to 2020. And there was word about the rain that much of Iowa has had over the past couple of weeks. Even with that rain, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's weekly drought report late last week showed that 64% of the state was still considered abnormally dry or is experiencing severe or moderate drought. And that is your Memorial Day summary of another consequential week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. I'll be back tonight live at 7 on KHOI's Capital Week, when Laura Bellin and I will talk about everything that took place under the Gold Dome in Des Moines last week and what it means for all of us. Then I'll make a return trip to the same virtual seat on Local Talk on Friday morning at 7, when I'll report on what makes news around Ames. In the meantime, have a meaningful Memorial Day holiday and a great week.
There is a web of light that we all are a part of. Recall the truth beneath your feet. Living proof, carry it on the wings of a dove. On the wings of a dove. Watch the days, the seasons change. See it dancing on the light. Watch it soaring on the wind. Let this beauty pull you in. This is surely who we are. This is surely who we are. When we respect it, we respect ourselves. When we love this, we love ourselves. When we honestly give, we are truly free. The intent of community. Learn to recognize the friend that you are part of who I am, and I embrace all that I am. And I embrace all that I am. As we learn to spin this web again, let the truth that's in our hearts expand to embrace all we see. This is where the healing starts. There's music pouring through our blood, breathing life into these bones. Music calls us home. It's calling us home. Listen to the beat, and you feel the earth beneath your feet. And turn your thoughts back to the wild. Look with the eyes of a child. Life was meant to be this sweet. The earth was meant to be this sweet. Know your thoughts, for reasons change. See them drifting on the wind. Feel them pull you towards the light, shining on what must be left behind. Leave behind. It was meant to leave behind. As we learn to spin the web again, let the truth that's in our hearts expand to embrace all we see. This is where the healing starts. There's music flowing through our blood, breathing life into our bones. It's taking us home. It's taking us home. It's taking us home.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis Hart. With your recap of the news and the music interlude was Big Blue Sky, Web of Life. This is where the healing starts. There's music flowing through our blood, breathing life into our bones. It's taking us home. Let's welcome Marilyn Schnormeyer, gift shop manager at Ryman Gardens. Hi, Marilyn.
Good morning.
Oh, so great to have you with us.
Thank you for letting us be here.
Yeah, we're going to talk about people's backyards, flowers, and I'm going to learn more about Altrusa. Could we just start there?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Altrusa has been around internationally for a very long time, but here in Ames, it started in 1965 with a group that saw a need to service the community, however it's needed. And we continue every year to be approached by various groups, typically nonprofit groups that have needs out in our community. And we do our best. We can't get to all of them, but we try our best to help those that we can. And we have some longstanding events throughout the year that we do. But this year, we're trying something a little bit new. Our biggest fundraiser for over 30 years has been the holiday home tour in the Ames community. But we had a little bit of an interruption last year.
Yeah, we sure did. Yeah.
We weren't able to do that. So we just tried to think, what else could we do that might be on that same, of that same caliber? And fortunately, we got a partnership going along with Ryman Gardens, and several homeowners in the Ames area stepped forward, and we're planning a spring garden tour.
Oh, this is wonderful. So Altrusa is dedicated to strengthening the community through various activities, but just people helping people.
Absolutely.
It looks like you're going to have a garden tour. Now, this will be Saturday, June 5th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So let's just start out. I learned a lot of the background from the Ames Tribune. It's nice to have the Ames Tribune kind of scoop us, but give us the groundwork of a network of information, and then having you on. So this is really good timing.
Absolutely. We just want to promote this because the funds that are raised from this will go to four local agencies. We post what we are intending to do for these big fundraisers. And we had over 40 agencies approach us with their needs from this particular event. We annually choose four agencies when we do the holiday home tour, or in this case, the garden tour, to help support. They propose their need to us. And it's a hard decision, but we have to narrow it down, and we try not to repeat every year, you know, each year year to year. We try to choose different groups, and I might just tell you who the recipients will be this year.
Yeah.
We have Martha's House of Hope, NAMI, or the National Alliance of Mental Illness in Central Iowa, the Bridge Home, and the Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance Program.
Oh, wonderful organizations. What is the Bridge Homes?
The Bridge Home formerly did go by another name, and now I'm not.
That, you know, let's give that information to me. I'll include that on the website.
Okay.
A little bit of background about all four of those. But let's get right with, let's learn about the Lion Heart Gardens. Where Ed Lyons, I think he doesn't own a lawnmower.
No, he does not. But he has a fabulous yard. Oh. If you've been down Hodge Avenue, I bet you could spot which home belongs to Ed and Dylan. Ed is our director at Ryman Gardens. And when I approached him about this idea, he was quick to jump on board and not only offer us Ryman Gardens as part of the admittance for the purchase of the tickets, but his own home as well. And he experiments with lots of plants, and he just has a fabulous yard, and there's all sorts of little hidden treasures there to be found. And Ed will be on property that day to talk to anyone that's curious to know. Ed's garden was featured on a recent PBS program hosted by our assistant director at Ryman Gardens. And he also was spotlighted in a recent gardening magazine. So there's a lot of attention given to his yard. He spends a lot of his precious time there, and it shows.
And Marilyn, you touched on something there. We're not going to be able to say how much the tickets are, but this contribution that weaves through the Ryman Gardens, so there is a small fee, but it's going to go to a great nonprofit work. But that allows you the opportunity to tour Ryman Gardens once
absolutely.
You get the
ticket. You'll see five residential gardens plus Ryman Gardens for the price of this ticket.
Yeah, and I hope we've got time to talk about all the new things at Ryman Gardens. So that'll be the Lionheart Gardens at 725 Hodge Avenue.
That's correct.
With Ed Lyons. Thank you to the Hart family for this. The Hillside Hostas of Dee and Don Draper.
And again, Dee and Don Draper were recently featured on the same Gardening with Style program on PBS. They live northwest of Ames in a timber area, and they just have a beautiful property that's all shade garden. They are particularly known for the wide variety of hostas.
Oh, that grow in the shade. Sure.
Other perennial shade plantings. And it's a terraced garden, I might mention. Just a reminder, this is a walking tour, so people that do go out need to be prepared for that and certainly be cautious, but we'll have homeowners and our own volunteer group on site to assist and answer questions. But the Drapers just have fabulous variety, and they're very knowledgeable about their plantings, and they have different sections, and Don has prepared a map that will be provided to people so they know what they're looking at as they walk through the property.
Did I read where they have over 1,000 hostas? Different hostas.
Yeah. Yes, who knew there were so many?
Yeah. They're truly amazing. That's at 4912 West 190th Street. I believe you said northwest, just northwest of Ames.
It's west of the country club a little ways.
West of that country club out there. Okay.
Right.
And you have a nice garden backyard at 1027 Ridgewood Avenue, the Russ Hoffman Martha Stewart residence.
Yes, the Stewart Hoffman family has wonderful landscaping projects that they have implemented into their backyard. Some are brand new. I was there recently and they were in progress of making new ones for themselves, let alone those of us that will be visiting them next weekend. Very exciting, different little gardening structures that they're making with rock and so forth, and things that anyone could do. And they're very creative and very artistic little sections of yard to explore.
I just love those amenities that kind of highlight what people are growing in their backyards.
They have a wonderful water feature in their backyard as well. Ooh. It's very, very soothing and nice to see.
Good to know. Yes. Yeah, the water features. Our wildlife, our songbird communities love those water features. The next one, I'm really curious, and I can't wait to see the peonies of Chris and Tom Jurek's.
All right. Well, the Jurek's live northeast of Ames, east of Ada Hayden Lake, and their property is massive, and it's on a hillside that goes down to the Skunk River, and it's all planted in terraces. It's just beyond words. And besides the 1,000-plus varieties of peonies that Chris and Tom show, they have irises. They have just about every flowering planting that this area supports, and it's just incredible. Their home was featured in Better Homes and Gardens magazine about a year ago, and who knew that we had a property in this area like that? And you can't see it from the road. You need to explore this. It's well worth the price to see.
I wonder, as you're describing it, I think their backyard might be the Skunk River.
Yes, it's quite a few acres that flow down to the river.
Oh, sure. Okay. Go to the Jurek's and see the peonies. And here's a name I'm familiar with, Veronica Lorson Fowler, who works with the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. The Fowlers at 1031 Ridgewood Avenue.
Right. So Veronica lives next door to the Stuart Hoffman family. Their yards adjoin each other through a cute little passageway they've built into their hedgerow there. And Veronica, too, has some beautiful plantings. She's been curating her garden for over 30 years. She's known for her gardening journalism in the area. And just some beautiful things that I pass their homes every day. And I'm bound to hit a car one of these days because I'm always turning my head to see what's blooming and what's, you know, in its full glory as I go past. But their gardens are quite private as well because their homes sit up on a hill a little bit. So you have to be out on your feet and walking through their backyards to see all of these just beautiful things that they have spent hours cultivating and growing back there.
Oh, that's just a wonderful neighborhood, a wonderful backyard area. It sounds like once we have the opportunity to visit there on June 5th, that we won't have to be so rubbernecky as we drive through that neighborhood. We'll already know what beauty that their backyards are offering. And to have that sharing with the community. What a wonderful fundraiser you've hit upon.
And I just have to comment that these homeowners were all quick to say yes when we approached them. We had leads from a lot of different places that led us to some of these same folks, and there was no hesitation, which made that job a much easier one to find people willing to allow the public to come explore their property.
Yeah, and you're going to have a real keynote opportunity right there at Ryman Gardens, it sounds like, with your origami in the garden displays.
Right. The origami in the garden exhibit opened last week. The artists, Jennifer and Kevin Box, are from New Mexico. And these are just fabulous installations that will be there until mid-November. But the sculptures that you'll see, and I think there's about 17 of them, all started as a piece of paper, and the process that they've gone through to move it to a mold to the metal sculpture that you now see is just incredible. And there's some YouTube and video available to watch the whole process and hear them speak about how this idea came to them and how the exhibit has grown. And the exhibit is not only at Ryman Gardens, but it's currently at two other gardens in the United States. They have a lot of pieces that they share, and there's different sizes depending on the size of the garden. And so it's just fascinating to see. And in our main building, there's actually three pieces shown, and then behind it, it shows the paper unfolded. And it's, you know, a way to look at origami that you don't think about. The overall is just talking about unfolding and what nature shows us in patterns. Unfolding Patterns is the name of it. And there's other places to see that in our conservatory that was just changed out this weekend. That hallway, you'll see mandalas. The mandalas are just fabulous. They're made out of natural items like twigs and pine cones and nuts, things that you wouldn't think about.
You've got so many wonderful displays and your butterfly garden and just so many things at Ryman Gardens. This is going to be really something to look forward to June 5th from 10 to 5. And I guess start at Ryman Gardens, make a contribution, and then get the map and go from there. And it's just so nice having you with us, Marilyn Schnormeyer.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good Memorial Day.
And same to you.
Thank you so much, Marilyn. Today, the Falcons of Great Spirit Bluff in southeast Minnesota have been incubating, and the hatch is imminent. Go to Raptor Resource Project website and check out their bird cams for Great Spirit Bluff. Let's take a phenology break with more local talk to come. Phenology is the recording of important events in nature when they are happening. And peregrine falcons will be hatching young soon. Whether referred to as the great-footed hawk, a long wing, a duck hawk, a rock hawk, or a blue meanie. The peregrine falcon occupies a unique position in our psyche of bird lore. Since medieval times, falconers have accompanied peregrines on hunting forays. The species was extirpated or lost as a breeding bird from the eastern United States by 1965. It is widely believed the last nesting pair was at Capilli Bluff, downstream from Lansing, Iowa. Early 20th century newspaper accounts tell of town folks walking down the railroad tracks by the river for spring equinox to celebrate the return of their falcons to the cliffs. In 1962, scientist and author of Silent Spring, Rachel Carson, sounded an alarm foretelling bird extinctions from ravaging biocides of the post-World War II era, particularly DDT. Although the chemical industry demeaned and criticized Carson's research, a basic law of nature was becoming obvious. Whatever affects wildlife ultimately affects humans. Realization of a silent spring was resonating, and legislation was needed to ban DDT and related culprits. The Endangered Species Act was implemented in 1972, and DDT was banned in the United States. However, it was too late for peregrines that no longer nested east of the Missouri River. These top-of-the-food-chain raptors were wiped out in the wild. Beginning in 1989 in Iowa, the peregrine presence has improved. And it's a big year for peregrine falcons on the Mississippi River. There are additional nesting pairs being reported at Dubuque, Bellevue, Clinton, Muscatine, and Keokuk. Getting these birds on the river was really the key to bringing them back. Bob Anderson with the Raptor Resource Project and Lowell Washburn, who was the chair of the Iowa Falcon Recovery Team, complemented each other in releasing wild birds back in 2000 that started this successful reintroduction. The Clinton site is increasingly exciting as Clinton County is the southern extent of their historic nesting range on the Mississippi River. With the inclusion of the new pair, Clinton has three nesting pairs. Predictably, there will be a lot of falcons flying over this stretch of the Mississippi River in early summer. Young falcons hone their flight skills, engaging in mock combat flights that provide incredible visual high-speed chases and maneuvers. And peregrines attract non-breeding peregrines, so it will be quite a show. Iowa's first nesting pairs in 1993 occurred at Des Moines and Cedar Rapids. The Cedar Rapids pair on their U.S. Bank building will begin hatching soon. And in Des Moines, pairs will be hatching young on the east side of the state capitol and downtown at the American Enterprise building, where they have been since 1993. There is a 2014 female falcon from downtown Des Moines at a cliff site at Wyalusing State Park in Wisconsin, just across the river from Pikes Peak State Park here in Iowa. This is the first instance of a building falcon crossing over to a natural cliff. The male is a solid cliff nesting bird that attracted the city bird to his eyrie or nest site. So let me try to describe a stoop or a dive of a peregrine falcon. As a speck in the sky at 2,000 feet, a peregrine falcon rolls over, folding its long wings. The speck becomes a bionic missile with anatomical attributes to do what it does and how it does it very well. See-through nictitating membranes arise from the lower eyelids to protect its eyes from dust or wind-blown seeds. Cartilaginous baffles in its nasal cavities ensure the back of the skull is not blown out from its velocity. The falcon's descent exceeds 270 miles per hour during the dive or stoop. Falconers have colorful descriptive terms when it comes to their raptors or birds of prey that includes hawks, owls, eagles, kites, and vultures. When diving at prey straight ahead, from great distance at great speed, a peregrine has a conflict between vision and aerodynamics. With eyes on each side of its head, it must turn its head approximately 40 degrees to see the prey. Doing this, maximum visual acuity at the deep fovea of one eye is achieved. However, the head in this position increases aerodynamic drag and slows the falcon down. The falcon could resolve this conflict by holding its head straight and flying along a logarithmic spiral path that keeps the line of sight of the deep fovea pointed sideways at the prey. And a wild peregrine observed with spotting scope and tracking device, indeed, approached prey the size of a pigeon from distances of up to 4,500 feet by holding its head straight and descending along a curved path that resembles the logarithmic spiral. As the diving falcon approaches its prey, its talons are clenched into a knuckle. The prey is dispatched into a poof of feathers with a knuckle to its noggin. In the case of larger birds, like a duck, the prey is stunned, then grabbed and ridden to the shore. The falcon's beak is specifically notched to separate the vertebrae of its quarry in a most efficient manner. The ensuing feeding frenzy is unlike any spectacle of spearing flesh, tendons, and muscle with feathers flying in a spray of mortal being than anyone could ever imagine. It certainly sustains the peregrine's vitality until the next spectacle unfolds. And that's our phonology on peregrine falcons for today. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Pat Schlarbaum. Tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live. Community radio is value-added listening for your enjoyment. Yet it's more. KHOI will elevate your quality of life. Become a member, tell your family and friends to become members, and lastly, give your life an assessment, and I think you will agree, an extra couple dollars a month from your sustaining membership will ensure KHOI remains a strong voice for the city of Ames and beyond. Go to khoifm.org and become a member. Or won't you please consider an additional contribution to your sustaining membership? It'll be worth every penny, as my dear mother used to say. So thank you, Millie Mom, for all that you have provided since your passing over Memorial Day 2004 at 87. And here's a story how the Native American Ho-Chunk community recognized Memorial Day at Black River Falls, Wisconsin. Growing up, I was always fascinated with those that came to Iowa before us, like names like Wapello and Decorah, Winneshiek and Winnebago. And is Meskwaki spelled with a K or is it Q-U? And how did those Fock and Sock names come to be? But back in the day when peregrine falcons were not endangered as a species. And many years later, a peregrine falcon recovery team was formed that included Bob Anderson with the Raptor Resource Project and other Department of Natural Resources staff and volunteers. The goal was to return an endangered species to its previous territory. And when we began returning peregrine falcons to the sacred cliffs of northeast Iowa, we met the Winnebago people who were converting their name to Ho-Chunk in the latter days of the 20th century. And it was from this partnering that the falcons created. I was invited by Pam Snowball and Bill Hall to Black River Falls, Wisconsin, and their Memorial Day weekend in Powell to share the story of the Ho-Chunk blessings with returning the falcons to sacred cliffs of northeast Iowa. In 2007, I showed up with a falcon display of mounted birds and interpretive panels of the work that had been accomplished, and falcons had returned to their sacred eyries or nest sites in the rocks and cliffs of northeastern Iowa. It was especially redeeming to share the falcon return with Ho-Chunk youth at the Memorial Powwow. Many youngsters had attended our peregrine falcon boat tour on the Mississippi River at Harper's Ferry in honor of the falcon's return to the greatest flyway on the planet. On Memorial Day Monday, I was invited as a veteran to volunteer my assistance with Ho-Chunk families honoring their veterans that had passed. And this is considered a great honor to accept their invitation. There are 151 flagpoles available, and each station receives a family with the cherished flag of their dearly departed. Introductions are brief yet compelling to the task at hand. Ever so respectfully, the flags are removed from their walnut cases, unfolded, and attached to the snaps tethering the flag to the mast. As the Star Spangled Banner anthem gains its honoring tempo, the flags begin shaking off the creases of time and amplify the sweeping coolness of each waft of the morning's breeze. Once Old Glory reaches the pinnacle of each mast, we allow the moment to be cherished as the life of each flag flying freely is manifested from each flagpole that encircle the memorial grounds. And some of the flags only have 48 stars. And then, ever so reverently, each flag is lowered to half-mast in honor of each veteran and some that have given the full measure of devotion to the United States of America, and tears flow freely arising from the moment of honor. When all the lanyards are tied off to the mast and secured, there are handshakes and hugs, and the families place pictures of sacred items at a chair with a blanket of their dearly departed. At noon, the families with veteran assistants gather at the flagpole to raise the flag to high mast, and a feeling of healing and release can accompany the joyful power of our flag in its honor and respect. Throughout the afternoon, the families are entertained with colorful native dance and drumming, good food, good artwork, visiting with old friends and creating new friends. And along towards dusk, when taps resonate throughout the memorial powwow grounds, each veteran with each family member reconvene at their flagpole once again. The flag is lowered with solemn respect and reverence for the person's life that is being honored. The flag is gathered to ensure it does not touch the ground. Then, with the assistance of a family member, the flag's length is held in place, and some early Boy Scout training is utilized. The flag is correctly folded, starting with creating a triangle, a form of stability. When the flag is tucked into its rightful triangle, I would focus upon the seven stars that appear for the four directions, one for the west, north, east, and one for the south, one for the earth and our water and all our wildlife resources, and one for our blue sky and ancestors, and one star for the family member whose flag we have just flown on a memorable day with a chance to be close to those family members once again. And the flags are returned to their walnut cases for protection until the next time. I won't be able to join the Green Deer family this year at Black River Falls, as another veteran will step up and assist their family in a good way. And those flags will be approaching full mast shortly, I'm sure, then lowered to half mast on this Memorial Day. And each of those families will stand united as a proud culture of Ho-Chunk. And family members of their dearly departed veteran will remember the good each of those individuals gave to the community, and will remember their work that each contributed to ensure this flag flies freely from this generation to the next and the next forever. And that's how the Ho-Chunk Native community of Black River Falls, Wisconsin, recognize Memorial Day, this day, May 31st, 2021. Welcome State House Representative Herman Quernbach and learn about some very important Memorial Day activities.
I'm Ursula Rudenberg, speaking with Herman Quernbach, treasurer of the Ames Patriotic Council. Hi, thank you for speaking with us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
Last year, you were not able to publicly, in person, hold a Memorial Day ceremony. This is really the first Memorial Day that we are observing since the pandemic. Tell us what's being planned this year.
Yes, the Patriotic Council, we are going to have a Memorial Day program this year. But we are still cautious about having a large public gathering. This year it's going to be something of a hybrid program. Some of it is going to be online and some of it's going to be in person. The whole program will be available online, but the latter part will be at the Ames Municipal Cemetery. The overall program will start at 11 a.m. and our main speaker is Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Brian Egger. He's a retired F-16 pilot. And the mayor of Ames, John Hale, is going to also be offering a welcome. And there'll be a few other elements in the program. All of that part will be online. After that part ends, we will switch live to the Ames Municipal Cemetery, where we will have the traditional raising and lowering of the flag, a rifle salute, playing of taps, and along the way, we will be reading the names of the veterans who are Ames residents who have passed away in the last 12 months. So it's as much of the regular program elements as possible. We just organized it in a way to try to avoid a large public gathering. There is some chance of rain on Monday, and when it rains, we have traditionally moved the program indoor to the city auditorium, and it was the possibility of a large indoor gathering that I think most influenced our decision and on the design.
So this is kind of a hybrid event, still part virtual with some degree of actual gathering. Tell us again the timing of this, just to be clear, when what is going to happen. I know you already said it, but let's go through it one more time.
Nothing wrong with repetition.
Yeah.
11 a.m. is when the program will begin. To get online access, here's what I would suggest the easiest way. Fire up your Google machine and search for Ames Patriotic Council, Ames Patriotic Council. And if Google is working the way it did when I tested this last night, the first two things that will come up will be the Ames Patriotic Council's webpage and our Facebook page. And either one of those will work. If you go in through Facebook, when you get to our main Facebook page, then you have to click on events. So AmesPatrioticCouncil.org, our website, or Facebook for Ames Patriotic Council, and then events. Either way, if the technology gods are with us, and we keep our fingers crossed, either way we'll get you access to the program.
Okay, so that's at 11 o'clock. That's the virtual program.
That's the virtual program, and we will segue directly once that's finished to the Ames Municipal Cemetery.
So about what time?
I don't know that we have an exact timing yet of the first part, but I would guess the first part would go perhaps half an hour.
So you're thinking sometime between 11:30 and 12 at the cemetery.
That's right. The cemetery portion will also be available online.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, if the technology gods are with us. We had a segment from the cemetery for Veterans Day, and that worked out fine. So I think that the volunteers who are handling that have a pretty good handle on that technology. So tune in or dial in or whatever you want to call it when you're on the internet. Connect at 11 o'clock and just stay through and you'll get the whole thing.
If it's raining, will you still go to the cemetery and have a ceremony there?
Yes. The American Legion is providing the rifle salute. And I presume a bugler can play taps in the rain. What we do with a flag in the rain, I don't know. The other thing up at the cemetery, if the weather is fair, then we will be bright and early that morning and with a couple of dozen local scouts from a couple of troops putting up the avenue of the flags. All of the streets within the cemetery, the pathways in the cemetery lined with flags. Something that some people apparently didn't know, those flags are very special. They are donated by the families of the veterans who are buried at the Ames Cemetery. So each flag is individually identified. There's a little metal tag on the flagpole, and there's a number on the stand that is sunk in the ground. So each flag is individually identified and individually located, and so families of veterans who've donated a flag, they can come and they can find their loved one's flag at the cemetery. Now again, all of this is with the weather cooperating. If it's fair, then we will get the avenue of the flags up. I think it's quite a sight. We are up on the order of 648 flags. The roadways within the cemetery, most of them are lined with flags. About every 10 feet, there's another flag.
So the flags are put along the road. They're not put on graves themselves. They create like a border for the road.
Individual graves may also have flags. The Patriotic Council doesn't take responsibility for getting that done, but you
right.
will If you go up to the cemetery, and I was just up there this morning, you will see a lot of individual graves also decorated.
I know most people know where the municipal cemetery is, but just in case for that person who wants to be there and doesn't know exactly where.
9th Street, off of either Grand or Duff, turn east, and you go as far as you can go. That will take you right into the cemetery.
Thank you. So part of the event that's happening at 11, the mayor is going to speak, and then you have a keynote speaker, Brian Egger. Tell us a little bit, who is Brian Egger?
Well, he's a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. He's originally from Northwest Iowa. Graduated Iowa State in 1988, a bachelor's degree in aerospace engineering. He then went into the Air Force, got his pilot's wings, and flew an F-16 for 23 years, including assignments in South Korea, Germany, and Italy. That's where he was stationed. He has 4,000 hours flying an F-16. If you stop and think about that, if you work 40 hours a week, year-round, minus 2 weeks vacation, that's only 2,000 hours. So he basically spent two whole working years in the pilot's seat up in the air someplace. That's a lot of flying.
Yeah.
That is. 700 of those hours were combat time, including missions over Bosnia, Herzegovina, Iraq, and Afghanistan. So this has to be one of the most experienced pilots in the United States Air Force. He's retired now. And he's still flying. He's flying for a commercial airline.
Was he chosen to be the speaker because of his extensive duty, I mean, experience in flying, or was there another reason why he was chosen?
He was suggested, actually, by Tim Garton, who is currently serving as the president of the Patriotic Council. Tim has heard him speak and was very impressed, so suggested the idea, and it sounded terrific. This is actually a little example here of our, if you will allow the phrase, taking lemons and making lemonade. Colonel Egger actually lives in Texas these days. Our organization is low budget. This is the treasurer speaking, so you know I know what I'm talking about. We could not afford to fly him in to speak if we were doing the whole program in person. But video travels a lot cheaper than humans do, and we took the fact that we were constrained to an online program for much of it, and invited him to speak to us over the internet.
Not being able to do something, and suddenly you're doing much more.
Well, yep, and you know, there are so many things that we have all learned how to do in the last 15 months online. I'm hoping that some of them will continue. Well, you know, I spent a little time down in Des Moines each spring in the legislature. We have had our subcommittee meetings on individual bills available online through Zoom, and that has allowed a lot of people to listen in, actually to participate, without being in Des Moines, without having to come to the Capitol, without having to hire a lobbyist. I hope that that's one practice that we continue. I would think that taking our Memorial Day program, maybe our Veterans Day program, making those available online as well on a continuing basis. You know, we have a lot of veterans and their families, you know, who are in retirement homes who may not have good access to transportation, but I think who would very much still enjoy being able to view and hear our program. That might be something we could continue.
This is Ursula Rudenberg for KHOI, speaking with Herman Quirnbach, who is the treasurer for the Ames Patriotic Council, giving us a rundown of what's in store for today on Memorial Day in 2021. Herman, did you miss having a Memorial Day last year?
Oh, yeah. You know, a year ago May, we didn't know much of anything about this virus, except that it was highly contagious and it was killing a lot of people. And, you know, like so much of all of last summer, we just put our normal activities on hold.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to do a Veterans Day program online, and I thought that came across very well. We did manage to do, I think you broadcast our reading of the names of the deceased veterans.
That's right.
We did what we could, you know, to honor and to remember those who had passed away. But I am certainly looking forward to next year. You know, we won't be doing the parade this year either. The parade is a lot of fun, and the ceremony is very moving. So I'm looking forward to returning to normal in so many ways.
So, Herman, and in parting, what is your Memorial Day message that you could share?
Well, I think about my dad. I think about Lee's dad and her uncles. All of those four individuals served in the Navy in World War II. Lee lost one of her uncles, went down with his ship in the Pacific, and another uncle was actually a prisoner of war for 3 years, I think part of the Bataan Death March, captured in the Philippines. And, you know, my dad was not involved in combat, but it, you know, it hijacked his life for 3.5, 4 years. A lot of people made a lot of sacrifices, and a lot of them didn't come back. You know, I think that that is something that we have to remember and honor, but I hope we also take inspiration from that. For people to serve their communities, there's lots of ways. You know, certainly serving in the military is one way, but there are lots of other ways that people can contribute to the community, to the country, and I hope that people will draw inspiration along those lines.
When you commemorated Veterans Day last time, you really made a point of honoring many people who have really served courageously during the pandemic and to really recognize that work that was done.
That's absolutely true. You know, you talk about people on the front lines. Well, it's not just the folks in the foxholes. It's the medical personnel in the emergency room. It's the people in the nursing homes that have been so hard hit. It's really everybody who's been in any kind of a public-facing position. They've been exposed to risk constantly and still even ongoing. You know, we've gotten to nearly 50% of the adults vaccinated, which is a remarkable accomplishment in the last 5 months. But that means we still have 50% to go. And, you know, only just recently, kids 12 to 15 have been okayed for vaccine. Under 12, we still don't have a vaccine for them. So there are still risks out there. The risks are being mitigated more and more each day. But we have to maintain caution, which is really why we're operating with a hybrid program. We also have to recognize and remember the people who are still out there fighting this awful disease.
Okay. And once again, the Facebook page is Ames Patriotic Council, and the website is amespatrioticcouncil.org?
That's correct.
And the program starts at 11 o'clock virtually?
It's 11 o'clock today, which is Monday, the 31st of May.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for the public service that you perform, Herman.
Oh, well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. It is my honor to represent the community.
This is Ursula Rudenberg for KHOI, and I have been speaking with Herman Quirnbach, Ames Patriotic Council, and he's been giving us a rundown of what's in store for today on the first Memorial Day being celebrated publicly since the pandemic, the first step towards reopening a public celebration of Memorial Day, a careful step, keeping public safety in mind at the same time. Thank you, Herman, for speaking with us.
Okay. Hope everybody can link in.
Thank you so much.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and we'll be sure to listen in for Capital Week at 7 p.m. with Laura Ballard and Dennis Hart. KHOI is streaming live at khoyfm.org. Please remember to hit that play button, and also please remember to support this station financially when you go to that website, khoyfm.org, and find the yellow donate button. Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rundberg and Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Monday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. Thanks to Marilyn Schnormeyer with Altrucia Community Group, and thank you, Ursula Rundberg, for your report with Representative Herman Quirnbach on this Memorial Day 2021. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard was Big Blue Sky, The Web of Life, and that was just the Avid Brothers. This land is your land. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! And Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. This is your time to become a member or boost your sustaining membership. whatever you can spare. It's time to fund this community radio station when you go to khoifm.org or call 515-292-2878. Thank you for listening. This is Pat Schlarbaum wishing you a healthy and memorable Memorial Day. See you again on the radio.